Cape Talk. A worldview from London with Adam Gilchrist.
Sorry, I am stepping on Mario's toes. Good morning, Adam. How are you doing this morning?
Good morning, Rafilwe. I am very well, thank you. Yeah.
Good.
Like a lot of people here, a bit short on sleep, but you would never detect it, would you, from my slurred speech and the way I'll stumble through this?
Not even for a second. I mean, can I let you in on a secret?
Oh, go on.
Okay, it's just you and me anyways. I mean, so there are some shows where people are like, oh my gosh, that was an amazing show. And I'm like, really? I was hungover. So, you know, moving along.
I know what you're saying.
Yeah, it's happened once.
Sometimes twice. You can fool yourself in that, though, can't you? Think, oh, that was good. And then you listen back and you go, oh no.
Exactly. But you sound fantastic.
Bless you. Thank you.
Absolutely. Let's kick off in the US.
Yeah. This is interesting. An American businesswoman, Marjorie Taylor Greene, she has won the Republican nomination for a seat in the U.S. Congress standing in Georgia. Not that interesting yet, but she is a no-nonsense Georgian lady. She's pro-Trump, pro-guns, pro-wall. Remember that? Remember the wall thing? Anyway, she's anti-abortion, but she's also, crucially, pro-QAnon. Now, this is the growing group of people who are united in the belief of a mass conspiracy theory. The people in QAnon, and there are many within them, they believe that Donald Trump is waging a secret war against elite satanic pedophiles who exist in government, business, and the media. And that in waging that war, those people, those traitors, as they put it, are plotting against the president. From this distance, and from your distance as well, I would suggest it sounds a bit daft, desperate, dangerous, maybe.
Indeed. And a heightened version of what's been sort of bubbling under.
Yeah, that's the trouble. It's the heightened version aspect to it, though, that is particularly worrying, because the idea that, of course, if you argue against this, then either you are a purveyor of fake news or you are a Satan-worshipping traitor. It, of course, may be the politics of paranoia. And worryingly, of course, around the world, the politics of paranoia can get people elected. But also, just to say that this woman, whilst being the first openly QAnon person to stand for office and to be up there with a chance of getting in, the FBI has designated QAnon a potential domestic extremist threat. Or is that because the FBI are Satan-worshipping traitors? I wonder.
Well, they have. The right-wing sort of the right-wing extremist bodies have been. The FBI has had heightened oversight of them as terrorist groups. Which they are,
in many
respects, Dylan Roof being an example. So
an openly hostile terrorist group that doesn't want to answer questions about itself and seems to have Donald Trump's backing, if not his leadership.
I mean, he loves David Duke, right?
Yeah, quite. Where are we going with that?
Right, okay, yeah. I'll leave it alone. Europe's virus spike, what on the world? What on earth? Eish.
English. Yeah, here we go. A surge in the continent of Europe, mid-holiday season, mid-heat wave. So, you know, put those things together. Germany has recorded its biggest daily increase in cases for more than 3 months, so 1,200 cases in Germany in 24 hours. In France, 2,500 new cases. In Spain, 1,400, and a whole series of new hotspots, which is a problem for Spain because they thought they had it more contained, but it's not. First in Belgium, mask wearing is now compulsory in public places in Brussels. They hadn't had to do that before. They're doing it now. There are more travel warnings across many European countries, more border restrictions in some cases, and the whole continent, of course, is plunging into recession. Well, I suppose the whole world is plunging into recession, but the UK announced its own official recession with a 20% economic slump in 3 months.
Oh, that was hectic.
20% in 3 months. Boy, oh boy. It's not over yet, of course, is it? It's not over.
It's not, and unfortunately, you know, coming in, you know, I think it's now that's your first quarterly number since Brexit, right? Coming in significantly below. I think most of Europe was coming in the mid-teens.
Yeah.
I just saw a political sort of slanted tweet around that.
Well, do you know what? We haven't even been hit by Brexit yet because the quarter before was a 2% dip, and I think most economies can handle a 2% dip without the alarm bell ringing. but 20%, and then whatever happens in the third quarter, and oh look, at the end of the year we exit the European Union, which is going to cost, I have no idea what
that's
it's going to cost us.
You're doing much better than the States, though, who came in at like 34. So 34%, so that's good. Speaking of your holidays, and I know we want to move on to the future of champagne, but people are definitely looking a lot more, a lot happier, even behind the masks in Europe. I'm quite jealous of the sunshiny photos that keep coming out of there.
Yeah, although I'm not sure if 34 degrees and sweltering entirely makes you happy. I mean, it's good, but on the other hand,
coronavirus doesn't
much.
Survive in heat.
Oh, okay.
Yes. Well, that's why the southern hemisphere was lasting so long.
It could be partly that, couldn't it? Does it survive in extreme cold? Because we'll probably have that in about 3 months, and I'll be bleating about that too.
No, then you're in trouble, bro. moving on to the future of champagne. This is very important business.
Yeah, South African vineyards, take note. French champagne is in trouble. It has been, by all accounts, an exceptional year for champagne. Now, normally they wouldn't, I think, quite be picking the grapes yet, but they've had perfect sunshine, perfect temperatures, just the right amount of rain at the right time for champagne. But no one is buying the stuff, of course. No weddings, no big functions, no business parties. So the big wine houses already have a billion bottles of bubbly sitting doing nothing. Then throw into this bumper year for champagne. Bear in mind that most champagne houses have quotas and the so-called single yield rule. So they create the sort of elitism and keep the price higher by doing it that way, and keep the quality up as well, arguably. So not all grapes can be picked anyway. But given that they've got a billion bottles hanging around waiting to go, there are 15,000 champagne producers, some bigger than others, obviously, but 15,000. And after 300 years of this, the question is, can any of the smaller producers survive, and how many of the big ones are at risk? They've got a big meeting next Tuesday, I believe it is. And I don't know, it's one of the worst things in business, isn't it? You've got a great product, great conditions to make your product even better. It's an affordable luxury that most people see it around the world. And there's nothing to stop you apart from the fact that no one is damn well buying it.
That's right. It's a problem. I'm sorry, I'm not chuckling at them. It's just, it's a difficult one. And of course, it's one of those sentimentally driven purchases. And I guess that's the luck of the draw of luxury.
Exactly that. And it's not something you could predict. And it's, I mean, how could you possibly level against it? The only thing is, I suppose, is that it's when you put all your eggs in one basket, or in this case, all your grapes in one barrel.
Yeah.
So champagne doesn't produce a cheaper alternative, which might have saved them.
That's right.
But if they had, there again, you know, perhaps we'd all buy the cheaper alternative and not the more expensive one. So it's a tricky call for them.
It's cyclical. They'll be fine. I know that those guys will be just fine. Thank you so much, Adam. Catch up with you tomorrow.